Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelaine.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined this time in Alaska, not New Orleans, by Corey Chatelaine.
Yeah, man, lamentations this week because there's no char grilled oysters this week. So yeah, I'm a little sad, but you know, we got to go. The EPL's back in business.
That is right. The EPL is back, and I don't want to be sound too approving of the product, but just after this, we've had a great summer of soccer with the World Cup. And the World Cup is a spectacle of its own because of the vast amount of talent amassing in one place from around the world. But after watching this opening weekend of EPL fixtures, Corey, it just shows me that the EPL by far is the best league in the world just because of the quality of play and the pace of play. It just blows every other league out of the water, and it's very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, La Liga is going to have more technical players from top to bottom. But, yeah, for overall quality product, EPL is the best for me. Now, granted, I would like to see more Bundesliga games. Hopefully that will be coming down the pipe soon. But, for overall product, EPL for me.
So, yes, it was a fantastic opening weekend, sir. We had everything rolled up into one weekend that you would like to see and you would expect to see. We had, you know, controversial red cards. We had penalties. We had missed penalties. We had balls hitting off posts. We had dodgy corner calls, which led to wins and goals. It was just epic.
Yes, and don't forget the guest free taker in y'all's game.
Yes, and the drunken West Ham fan getting onto the field, taking a free kick, and I do believe that today I read he earned himself a 10-year stadium ban with that.
Oh, man, and I was hoping you were going to say a 10-year contract with, like, you know, Ramsbottom or, you know, one of those lower league clubs. I mean, his shot was on net, for Christ's sake.
Leighton Orient or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at least give the guy a month loan.
All right, folks, we're going to hit all the big topics. You know, we're going to hit all the big clubs and all the talking points from the weekend in store for you today. Manchester United and Swansea, we'll break some of that down. We'll talk about Louis Van Gaal. We'll talk about Harry Redknapp. We're going to talk about Arsenal, Spurs, the Liverpool and Southampton match. And then we're going to end with a little discussion that we have not seen or heard anywhere else. So stick around for that discussion because it is going to be very thought-provoking and informative.
Yeah.
So are you ready, sir?
Analytics. Yes, I am.
All right, let's go. Well, with the hire of Louis Van Gaal at Manchester United. Yes, Van Gaal. The Brits go with the hard G, but that's not the case. That's not.
Oh, yeah. No, I was saying Louis Van God, but yeah.
I gotcha. Well, God has a hard G, too.
Yes, he does.
So, we thought with that, you know, our days of making fun of Manchester United and after the David Moyes debacle would be over. But no, we spoke too soon, my friends, because Manchester United Schadenfreude lives.
Yeah, it's the jello of the sports world for me. There's always room for it.
So Swansea walk into Manchester United at Old Trafford, brand new manager. You know, new blood, it's a new beginning, blah, 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 and they lose.
Yeah, and for anybody that was following me on Twitter yesterday that saw the dumb debate that I got myself into, but, this line will be for some of those people. Oh, gee, how will a club like Swansea ever compete with a big club like Man U? I just do not know.
Now, we must say that
it's early.
We both picked Swansea to be relegated, which...
Yeah, and we both picked Man U to be in the top four, but they lost, so, you know, I'm going to kick them while they're down.
Yes. So Swansea played an outstanding game. Seems like maybe you know, Gary Monk had, for that day, he had the right plan in locking down the Manchester United offense. And, you know, it could have been a case of Manchester United kind of hurting themselves with the lineup they had out there, because it was less than what you would expect from such a club.
Yeah, I didn't get up for the match because I had gotten in late back from New Orleans. So I would the match started at 4:30. I didn't get in my apartment till about 1:45. But yeah, so when I got up for the other matches, I was pretty surprised at the lineup when I saw the post match report that Van Gaal put out, that he put out I don't think Lingard was a debutant, but Blackett definitely was. And like I said, I was pretty surprised that a guy like Van Gaal put out those two young guys. But then again, you know, a lot of those Dutch coaches like to take those chances like that. That's one reason why they're pretty interesting to follow.
Mm-hmm. And that's how clubs like Ajax and PSV get these transfer fees, because they're willing to play these talented players at a young age, and then they're able to sell them on. So, as we mentioned last week.
Yeah, now obviously part of that has to do with, you know, what we'll get into in a few minutes and then later on too. But, you know, so a lot of that had to do with Man U missing a few guys and the positions that Man U will likely address in the coming weeks in the transfer window.
Okay, yes, and that will be our major discussion point here very soon, but first I want to get through some Swansea tidbits. Here's two things that I garnered from multiple sources, and this is actually pretty interesting. So in the leading goal by the, I don't know, he's like an attacking midfielder, I guess, by Key for Swansea, that build-up to that goal had 29 passes, which was more than any build-up of any goal scored in the Premier League last season.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting considering that, I mean, you know, we all knew that the last couple of years Swansea likes to pass it around a bit, but, you know, to have a goal like that in the opening weekend after you sold off, you know, your talismanic goal scorer from the previous 2 years is definitely pretty interesting in that, you know, maybe we both, and, you know, not just us, but maybe Gary Monk's been a little underrated as a manager, obviously.
Well, you know what's not underrated?
Beer?
No, his hair.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, and what he's got going for him is he looks like a skinny version of the fat kid from The Sandlot, so.
Kind of, yeah, but he's got that very, you know, 50s, 60s-esque hair.
Oh, yeah, with the Brill cream or whatever they called it.
Uh-huh.
Where it's, like, kind of slick to one side or whatever.
Yeah, so he was looking quite dapper.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, with Swans, here's another thing.
Sign him up for the RAF.
I don't know how. You can take this fact, folks, any way you wish, but listen to this. Swansea all of last year did not beat a single team who finished in the top nine last year.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming you're in the league.
Yeah, in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah, because they beat Man U at Old Trafford at home last year in the Cup. So.
Mm-hmm. But in the league.
Yeah. Well, I would say regardless, that's still a very telling statistic that, like I said, maybe we've and I guess maybe I should restate that. Maybe me personally has underrated Monk a little too much, and you know maybe the situation at Swansea isn't as dire as we stated last week.
Yes. All right. And then one last thing here, and you'll enjoy this. Now, this was a personal observation of mine, but as you know, there are certain cretins out in the media, namely NBC's very own Neil Ashton, who I can't believe that they employ that guy as their insider.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, people, if you're not familiar with Neil Ashton's integrity or his journalistic method, you need to read his articles. The guy is a total scum. He's a muckraker.
Yes.
The old term that they use to write about these people, he is the definition. You look up muckraker in the dictionary, there should be a picture of Neil Ashton.
Yeah, Neil Ashton is one of those guys that is he doesn't always come off that way when he's speaking, but yeah, when he writes, he's just bitter at everybody.
So anyway, this is what I noticed. And this may be why a lot of people, I haven't seen anybody say this yet, but I've heard it levied at other managers, especially by one Mr. Neil Ashton. This is going to come to a shocker, Corey.
Uh-oh.
LVG,
Yeah.
during the course of a match, uses a notebook.
Yes, I even made notes of that myself, that I was like, oh, is the English media going to take him down like they did AVB with his silly little notebook?
Why is he looking in his notes? Shouldn't he
Yeah.
know what to do?
Yeah, why, what's he using the cheat sheet? This guy is a joke. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah. Everybody should know it. Just should pop out your head because you know everything. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So there we go. So you caught that too. So that's good.
Yes, yeah. Well, obviously I didn't see the match, but yeah, on one of the clips on one of the post-game shows I was watching, I saw him scribbling down, and yeah, I immediately went to my phone to make a note. It's like, oh, look, notebook.
Foreign manager of the notebook.
Yeah, whoa, what's up with the foreign managers in the notebooks, mate? What's he writing it down in English?
All right, we've already gone far too long on this, but we do want to wrap up this with some Manchester United transfer talk. And, you know, they had some injuries and some people unavailable for various reasons, but the lineup that he put out there on many levels was not expectant of what you would expect from a club like Manchester United. And so do you think that perhaps he put that lineup out there as kind of a red flag to the boardroom to say, hey, you need to invest some more money. I would expect up to, you know, 3 to 5 more players coming in before the end of the window. And it looked to me that the biggest thing that Manchester United needs right now is some pace in their side. They had none against Swansea. And, you know, in this 3-5-2, you know, whatever you want to call it, 3-4-3 formation, you need those fast, you know, wing back slash wings to be able to get back up and down in transition.
Yeah, you beat me to it because I was just about to say that the lineup that he put out was definitely, I think that's exactly what it was, because it's kind of when Arsene Wenger put out that ridiculously weak bench in the 8-2 drubbing at Old Trafford a few years ago, which then spurred the deadline trolley dash, as the English media called it, where we bought 5 players. I think that's, like you said, I think that's what that was, is that, hey, this is the lineup I'm putting out. It's the squad's clearly got some holes in it, and here's the proof. So we need to go spend. So I think you're right. I think that's, now I will say that part of that is kind of like what I said earlier, that the Dutch, who tend to be open-minded when it comes to many things, they do like to experiment a little. So I will put it, let's say 20% down to that, but yeah, 80% down to, like you said, I think it was basically a kind of a display to the board of, hey, here's the squad, we need money, or we need players, so send us some money.
Via Western Union, right?
Yes, or the Tampa Bay Bucks, since the Glazers own them, so
Oh. Yeah, they could just liquidate them.
yeah.
They're not going to make any money. Well, they are making money, but
Well, yeah, well, and that's why I'm saying they'll give it the man, funnel it the Man U, like a, like a shell or offshore shell corporation.
Yeah. All right. Now, another thing that shouldn't come to as a surprise, and we talked about this all throughout the summer, is the joy we would have in post-game interviews with Van Gaal and Harry Redknapp, both
Yeah.
coming back to the league. And guess what? They hit home runs. They struck gold in the very first match, both of them. Oh, man. LVG pregame was pretty funny. Basically, they asked him, how do you win today's game? And he said, if the players do what we agreed to do, which is basically a nice way of saying, if the players do what I tell them to do.
Yes.
And so obviously they didn't do that. So after the match,
Louis Van Saban,
they ask him, and I thought this was funny. They're like, was it a disappointment? And to his credit, he did start out, yeah, it's a disappointment, you know, to the fans and to the players and our supporters. But he ended it with, and it's also a disappointment to me and myself.
Yeah.
But he didn't add the I. Now, if you would have said me, myself, and I, that would have been funny. Now, I'm not quite sure if he meant it that way or if it's just his command of the English language isn't all that great. I mean, he speaks good English.
Yes.
For the most part, like most Dutch people do. But I thought it was pretty funny that he said me and myself. It's a disappointment for me and myself.
Yeah, what I don't think he added the I because he couldn't find an MP3 clip of that De La Soul song to where he could just held it up in the interview. Me, myself, and I.
Yeah. Then we also had the return of Harry Redknapp to the Premier League.
Old Harry! Welcome back,
where
Harry.
They lost the whole city, and our good friend Fat Lino won the nothing.
Yeah.
And in that match, Harry played in a formation they've been tinkering with the past couple of weeks in preseason, the 3-5-2. And in the post-match, Harry's going on and on about, oh, yeah, I've been playing the 3-5-2 for years. I don't know why everybody thinks it's such a big deal. I've used this for a long time. I know this system. The system's not an issue. And I'm like, what are you talking about, man?
Well, yeah, because there's a difference of, you know, maybe running a system in a particular match because it's got a matchup that you may like, and then there's a difference between running it as your standard system. And so, again, I'm not doubting that Redknapp probably used a 3-5-2 at some point in some matches that I obviously didn't see. But if he's going on like he ran the 3-5-2 a lot, then that's news to me. But it doesn't surprise me that Redknapp is trying to latch himself to that bandwagon, because if there's one thing old Ari like knows how to do, it's how to work the media.
Yeah, and it won't surprise me if in the coming weeks, it may not have to be a post-match interview, an interview, because the guy, you know, he'll go on any – the media requests his availability. He's there at the drop of the hat.
Oh, yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me if he in the coming weeks says, oh, yeah, I'm the one who taught LVG the 3-5-2.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm the one who recommended it to him many years ago. That was
yes.
Me.
Yeah, it came to him in a dream when he was at West Ham. He just didn't have the players to put it or something. You know, the story will go something like that.
Or, I would have played the 3-5-2 if I was able to keep Lampard.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Well, here you go. If Redknapp gets to have credit for running the 3-5-2, quote, years ago, I'm going to pat myself on the back because, if you recall, who said the 3-5-2, the 3-4-3 was going to be started to be used more and more in the EPL last year? Yours truly. Thank you very little.
Yes, and we brought that up.
Yes.
And you said that way back when we did our managerial special last year with the appointment of Roberto Martinez at Everton. So there you go.
Yes, because it's what they're running in France and Italy now, and those guys usually run the stuff first, and then it trickles to England.
That's right. So expect it in the MLS in about 30 years. Okay.
Yeah. Oh.
with all right. Bread. Yes. Now, usually we don't like to talk about our clubs unless we have to, but we will this week because nobody else is giving them love. Now, usually the alarm of the media, of the English media for North London is crisis mode.
North London crisis.
But it's not. It's now North London pandemonium.
Oh.
Both North London sides get game-winning goals in stoppage time. And excellent throughout, even more excellent for Spurs in a, you know, on the road against West Ham in a derby match, a tough derby match, and just the scenes and
for most of the match.
Yeah, and the jubilation I saw when Eric Dier, the, you know, first year player for Spurs, making his first start in the Premier League, scores a goal in the way in too, and you could see all the Spurs fans just going absolutely mental. It was unbelievable scenes. It just makes me so happy just thinking about it right now.
Yeah, which when I saw the clip, the way he actually took a touch, you know, it's like, well, he definitely doesn't look like your typical English center back. Now, I know he spent, you know, a good part of his childhood in Portugal, but that's what the first thing I thought of is like, well, if he grew up in England, he probably would have tried to clear the ball from that position. But having played in Portugal, he takes it around the keeper and slots it home like he's, you know, like he's a natural striker.
I know, yeah, and that's the exact point I was going to bring up is a lot of people are saying, you know, 9 out of 10 English strikers wouldn't be able to score a goal like that. So yeah. For a kid who's just 20 years old, who's a center back, who got moved out the right back when Spurs went a man down, to get forward like that and put such a move after a pass from another young English player in Harry Kane, who had a nice little, you know, reverse through ball. Yeah, most players would have hit that first time. And he had the...
Jermaine Defoe would have definitely hit it first time.
Oh, he would. But he, as a, you know, he's a pretty big kid. To have the athletic ability to get around the keeper like that and slot it in is pretty awesome. So, good on you, Mr. Eric Dier. And I just wanted to make one point again about the match. Because we both talked about old Big Sam and how he's probably not long for West Ham. And this weekend was another illustration of that, in my opinion, because you play most of the match a man up, but they didn't do anything with it. You know, usually most teams, when you get a man up, you'll throw another striker on there, but he didn't do so until it was too late. And they were down to 10 men themselves with the just foolish double yellow card situation by Collins. So, hey, Big Sam, you just keep on doing what you're doing because you're going to be unemployed real soon.
Yeah, I saw something earlier that he's I don't know if he's going to be given to Labor Day or that the betting houses were betting he was going to be gone by Labor Day. But yeah, it's I don't speak English there, Corey. So yeah, if he doesn't get a result next week, he's going to be in a pretty precarious position, I think.
Okay. Before we get on to...
But he'll end up somewhere in the championship, so...
Yeah, before we get on to you talking briefly here about Ramsey's goal in Arsenal, while we're talking about managers, I need a ruling from you.
Okay.
Do we count our predictions as first manager being sacked as wrong with Tony Pulis leaving Crystal Palace by mutual consent?
The wordsmith in me, where my dad wanted me to go to law school, will say Tony Pulis technically wasn't sacked. It was a mutual consent leaving, so no.
Okay, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
So we're still on track.
Yes.
When Big Sam gets sacked after they lose their next two matches.
Yes. Because like I told the Muppet that I got into the debate yesterday, words mean something, and he was not sacked.
Okay. Very good. And I had a point I was going to make. But again, it comes in out of midair and then disappears just as soon as it came. So please, sir, give me your thoughts on the game-winning goal by one Mr. Aaron Ramsey for your Arsenal.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure who this Aaron Ramsey is because around the Arsenal parts, we just call him Welsh Jesus. I mean, it was your typical Aaron Ramsey goal. He's just got that knack of showing up at the right time, being in the right position, and making the most of an opportunity, which is so ironic the way he played 2 years ago where he'd be in open space and he would sky the shot. So, you know, obviously that's a sign of maturity and, you know, kind of getting the rambunctiousness of youth out of him. But, I mean, he's obviously, you know, obviously it was a thrilling moment. They made us work harder than it probably should have been. But then again, you know, it's that's one of the reasons why the EPL is, or why I personally think the EPL is the best league competitive wise, top to bottom, because unlike some people's definition of competition, even the teams that you beat, they just make you work for it. So like I said, there's a lot of good teams that have poor records in this, or that are going to have poor records in this league, but they're still difficult to beat. So, obviously Palace put in that good performance, and even though Pulis had left, it was definitely a Pulis-style Palace, sans the dirtiness of when he was at Stoke. But, you know, they were really well organized, countered at pace, and countered with effectiveness. And they got the early goal on their set piece, which obviously I've seen this a lot in the Arsenal world, but whoever thought it was a good idea to mark Breda Hengeland with Alexis Sanchez needs to have a word with somebody needs to have a word with them. But so other than that, can't be too faulted for the performance, because early season probably going to have some iffiness, and 3 points is 3 points. So.
Mm-hmm. Now I just remembered what my point was going to be, and
yeah, go ahead.
I pray to God that this happens, because it'll be hilarious to see it happen to somebody else. But the word on the street is, and it's being reported by multiple outlets, is that Tim Sherwood will be announced.
Oh yeah, yeah.
As the new manager at Crystal Palace sometime this week. So I pray to God that this happens.
Well, yeah, because I heard on another podcast today that one of the first matches he may be involved with will be Crystal Palace QPR, which will be Sherwood versus Redknapp, and that may be the best press conference in the history of the EPL.
It may be.
Is the post game presser with those two guys that just has the potential just to be an epic quote fest.
But I really do. If Palace does hire Sherwood, I fear for their safety, because Sherwood won't set him up to play on the counter, because doesn't believe in that. He's going to attack, and they're going to be just getting ripped open left and right. So.
Yeah, because the other name I heard is Malky Mackay, and like I said, I have the choice between Malky Mackay or insane Tim Sherwood. Why is there even a question here? It's like, of course you hire Malky Mackay.
So we'll see what happens. And who knows? The media gets it wrong all the time, but it is being widely reported that Sherwood will be taking over, and I'd imagine that to happen the next day or two. If they intend on their new manager managing this weekend.
Yeah, because that has a chance of being Ian Holloway 2.0 for them. And I don't know, maybe that's why Simon Francis, the owner of Palace, maybe he wants Sherwood because of that open style. But, Sherwood, it's not just an open style he plays with. It's a suicidal style at times when he plays that super high line with guys that aren't suited for it.
And with no defensive midfielders.
Yeah, with no – exactly.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. People bash us for not having a defensive midfielder. Sure. I mean, Sherwood even played in central midfield. He should know better.
This is a guy who played Chadley in the central midfield at one point last year. Yes. That's all you need to know.
A winger.
Yeah.
Outside forward, or whatever you want to call him.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the love child and the darlings of the Premier League now. And let's talk about this Liverpool-Southampton match, sir. And let's just start on the other side of things. It seems to me that the new Southampton looks an awful lot like the old Southampton. I was pretty impressed with the amount of players they lost, that they were able to, pretty much play in the same manner and put in a good performance with so many new players.
Yeah, and I think everybody was fairly consensus on the afternoon in being pretty impressed with Dusan Tadic, who had a pretty nifty little back heel for an assist on Nathaniel Klein's goal.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. That was pretty.
But yeah, so everybody was pretty myself included, was pretty impressed with Tadic. Even though I picked him to be one of the relegation spots, I would like to reiterate that part of that had to do with Me thinking that it was going to be a lot of off-the-field issues with their board that was going to lead to that, not necessarily quality, because, like I said, everybody's got talent these days. It's just who puts it together in time. And because, like I said, I would definitely like to see Southampton stay up, because they're definitely a club that I don't have any issues with, and, you know, obligatory Lucy Pender reference, so.
Yeah, all right. Now let's go from one shade of red to another shade of red.
Yeah.
And this will please the cheerleaders at NBC.
They've definitely hitched their bandwagon to Liverpool this year, it seems.
Now, that broadcast.
Especially the Robbies.
Now, I mean, I don't mind. You know, here we're used to American sports to where, you know, especially in baseball and hockey and basketball, to where teams have their own announcers. So you expect them to be homers for a team. But for NBC to be just gushing over Liverpool the entire match is pretty sickening to me because it's not good broadcasting, in my opinion, on a national stage or an international stage for that matter.
Yeah, and I think it's a sign of the times, unfortunately, that it's kind of like we were talking about Neil Ashton earlier, or what we were alluding to with Neil Ashton earlier. It's kind of the Howard Stern thing, where a lot of the media these days take a kind of a willing adversarial role, where they look to, I don't know if offend is the right word, but they just look to kind of stir the pot. And you know, it's like what the English are always going on about, banter, banter. I watch because of the banter, blah, 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 blah. When a lot of times it's not banter, it's basically stirring the pot and getting people riled up, and then, you know, they flood your site or your channel with views. Because, you know, they're all hopped up, and I'm going to give you a piece of my mind, you know, that kind of stuff. So, like I said, I think that, unfortunately, it's kind of just a byproduct of a lot of those talk the kind of talk show mentality that a lot of the journalists and the media take these days. And, you know, unfortunately, we're still kind of in the infancy of that, so it's only going to get worse.
Well, you know, a lot of people on Twitter and other places have levied claim that's exactly what we do here on this very podcast, just described.
Well, yeah, but we're daft, and, you know, we're not getting paid as journalists, so it's different.
Okay. And I will take that as a...
If I was paid to be a journalist, I would be more, I would be more, whatever the word I'm looking for. Objective. Thank you.
Objective.
Thank you, other voice in my head.
All right. Now, here's a few things from the broadcast that were uttered that were just shocking. And I do believe it was Arlo White, of course, was the lead announcer. And was it Graham Lasso?
Yes.
Was his lieutenant, as they would say there?
Yes.
I like lieutenant. Anyway, he said that Dejan Lovren is the new Jamie Carragher.
Whew, that's, man, Arsenal needs to find a new Thierry Henry, because Thierry Henry made Jamie Carragher look like a Muppet on many occasions.
And then I thought to myself, well, that's fine. If he's the new Carragher, that means that Liverpool isn't going to accomplish anything for the next 10 years.
Well, yeah. Right? Well, they'll win a European Cup, and then they'll do nothing in the league.
So anyway, I thought that was a little
like
over
last
the top.
Year. So, yeah, no, it's. I mean, again, Lovren's a good player. You know, I wouldn't mind having him in my squad as a number three. But yeah, so it's definitely an example of one of those cases where, because of the club that you now play for, that you're linked with. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you become the next rising superstar.
Mm-hmm. And then this last one just baffles me. It was late in the match. I do believe the score was still 1-1. And Brendan Rodgers brought on former Southampton striker Lambert.
Yes.
And they were going on and on. Oh, this is brilliant tactics here. Getting another forward on. And I'm like... So you're telling me that it's a brilliant tactical move to bring on another striker in a game against a weaker opponent at home. That's brilliant tactics, apparently.
When you need a goal.
Yeah, when you need a goal, yes.
Yeah, it's well, you know, unless you're Mourinho, of course you're gonna put on the striker.
Yeah, Mourinho would have brought on another center back.
Yeah, or you know, if you're Mancini, because sometimes Mancini would bring on a third defensive midfielder when he was chasing a goal. But yeah, I mean, it's a I don't know. I thought it was, and I'm gonna steal a point from another podcast. But yeah, I thought it was kind of telling that how overly celebratory Brendan, at least in my opinion, how over celebratory Brendan Rodgers was when they got the late equalizer. That I think he's a little under, or he's a little more under pressure than people think, and. You know, I don't think they're going to fully do a Spurs like last year where all those players aren't going to gel and they're going to fall to mid-table. But, yeah, I think they're not – I mean, I'm still of the opinion they're not going to do nearly as well as seemingly a lot of pundits think. Because, you know, I just – I don't think a lot of the players they brought in are as good of quality as people seem to think they are, and especially Lambert. I mean, Lambert's a perfect example of you know, again, don't get me wrong – I wouldn't necessarily kick him out of my squad, but, you know, he's 33 and people are going on about how he's like some really top striker when he's nothing of the sort. You know, he's a hardworking striker. He's a, you know, an underrated striker in terms of the English style old number nine, where you can kind of score goals in multiple ways, both with your feet and your head. And, you know, he's got a pretty good free kick on him, but, you know, like I said, people are going on like he's a world-class striker, and he's simply not.
Yeah, those world-class strikers go for more than, you know, $2 or $3 million.
Yes, and they tend to end up at clubs like Liverpool before they're 33.
Usually.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to consult somebody on that.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, usually by 33, they're trickling to the MLS. Whoa.
Oh, jeez.
Whoa.
Oh. Hold on here. Where is it? Here it is.
Come on.
Oh, okay.
Hey, yo.
Yeah, sorry.
Nice timing, drummer.
Yeah, he's, sorry, he's too busy watching Liverpool highlights on NBC.
That's right. Okay. Anywho.
All right, yeah, and there's a lot of other stuff to get to, but, you know, we only have so much time. Unless you guys really want to start paying us, and we could do a daily show, but we need some moolah for that.
Well, yeah, well, let's do, like, that one MLS pod and ask for 80,000 or whatever ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, you donate. All you have to do is donate us. We're going to threaten to go off the air if you don't donate $10,000 by the end of next week. All right, see you later, folks. Bye. No.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to do that. And then be hoped to be saved by a Mexican outlet. Anyway, I did not say that out loud on air, so please do not send hate mail to @2daftyanks on Twitter. Do not do that for my bashing of...
You
know,
if you send the hate mail, send it to me.
Yeah. All right, now let's get into this discussion that I wanted to have.
Because wait, this is... one quick ending point on Liverpool.
Yeah, yes, please.
Okay. As much as I dislike the kind of Liverpool love that's seemingly going around, I at least can deal with it more than I can, you know, when it was Man U and Chelsea. So, because at least Liverpool has got a long and storied history where Chelsea was basically on the verge of bankruptcy, and a lot of their fanboys now want to, you know, they want to act like nothing before 2006 Mourinho Abramovich mattered. So anyway, that's all I had to say, is that at least with Liverpool, it's sort of deserved in a historical sense. But so, okay, go ahead.
Gotcha. All right, now we're going to just kind of pull back and take a bigger view of things here. And this is something, as I said, I haven't heard anybody discuss, but I think this deserves a discussion because it's already having an impact on the season, not only in the EPL, but other major leagues as well. And that is something that I'm calling the World Cup player hangover.
Yeah.
Where you see too many mojitos down in Brazil. Because of the fact that a lot of the top players from these sides who participated in the World Cup have not been made available yet. And in many cases, a lot of them haven't even, you know, trained for more than a couple weeks now or been featured in any preseason matches. And so they're not going to be ready. They're not going to be fit to play in league matches for another 2 or 3 weeks. So my question to you, Corey, is what do you attribute this World Cup hangover to? And is it not that it's a problem, but are we seeing more of this than we have after any other major tournament in history in the modern era?
Yeah, I don't know if statistically it would be the most. I mean, I would guess it would be, but I don't know for sure. But yeah, I think this is something you're going to see more and more of following Euro summers and World Cup summers, to where bigger players are going to be rested more because they're obviously playing more. Or you know, at the very least, the bigger players that make it to the latter stages of tournaments, because I think, and again, I don't have any actual evidence of this on hand, but my guess would be because player analytics are getting so popular now with everybody, even Sam Allardyce is one of the biggest users of analytics now that, and when I say analytics, I don't necessarily just mean player performance data, but just the physical monitoring data of who's potentially reaching a risk for stress injuries or muscular fatigue injuries by the amount of games they played and how much they run, you know, the heat map stuff. So like I said, that would be my guess, is that a lot, since the proliferation of these are starting to be used, or because of the proliferation of these type of databases at a lot of clubs now, that they're just starting to learn how to use a lot of this in terms of protecting their players, because, you know, England's one of those leagues that doesn't have a winter break. So obviously stress fatigue and, muscular fatigue injuries in the latter stages of the season seem to happen more than they do in other leagues. So again, that would be my guess, is that a lot of these clubs are starting to learn how to use these player monitoring analytics.
Now, with the Premier League having this now established 25-man roster rule, and with these, you know, rests in mind with these, you know, big-name players who play in these summer tournaments, do you think that will spur maybe a small movement amongst EPL teams to where, you know, some of these younger youth under 21 players that don't count against your roster getting more of a look in competitive, you know, first-tier matches?
Yeah, like we said earlier, that could have been a reason maybe Van Gaal went with a couple of youngsters. Obviously that's going to depend on club to club, because, clubs like our the two we support, more often than not, tend to give younger players a chance. And obviously that doesn't mean all the time, but, some clubs don't do it at all, and some managers are very adverse to using players under 25, 26 years old. I guess to your point, that I do think you're going to see this more often. Maybe not a lot of, not saying that, you know, you're going to start seeing 3 or 4 U21s in lineups all over the league, but, I do think you're going to start seeing, maybe 1 or 2 in the starting lineup, and maybe a few more on the bench more often, because, you know, we're also kind of nearing a generational transition, so to speak, in managers in the coming years too, I think, where you're going to start seeing a few more younger managers as some of the older guys retire. A lot of these younger managers are definitely, you know, for all the bashing that some people do in the notebooks, you know, that a lot of these notebook guys are also very heavily into these, you know, analytical databases. So, like I said, I think you are going to start seeing more and more of this in the coming future.
No, I think this is a if you think and just think about this in the big picture again, I think this is a pretty big turning point because, remember, I mean, the EPL's very competitive. A single point can mean, you know, you winning the title, you know, getting into Europe, getting relegated. And so if these managers are willing to rest some of these top players for just two or three games, which could have a big impact in the end, I think it's showing that they're, like you said, a really big rethink in terms of fitness regimes and being able to rest players to where, sure, you might not be able to play your top guys, you know, 35-plus games, but if you play them maybe, you know, 30 to 33 times throughout the season, you're going to get more out of them than you would playing them, you know, in every game possible.
Yeah, because I don't know if it's necessarily fitness regimes per se. I would actually think it would be more of you know, the recovery methods or the recovery schedules, because again, leagues like Spain play, you know, the top clubs are going to play as many matches as top clubs in England, because all the cups in Spain are two-legged, and you know, same thing with like Brazil. Every competition they have is two-legged, so, and they play, counting their state leagues, they play all year long just about. So, you know, Brazil does play the most matches, but they don't have a lot of injuries. So, but again, they also, like you were stating earlier, they also tend to rotate a lot more in their state leagues and their cups with younger players. So again, I'm kind of diverging off the point I wanted to make, but the point I was trying to make was that I don't think it's necessarily fitness per se, but just that the recovery, and especially in a league like England, where not only do you not have a winter break, but you have a really high match total clustered in 2 weeks, to where, depending on how the cup draw falls, sometimes these teams are playing five really highly competitive matches in a little over 11 or 12 days, which, you know, around the turn of the year when it's going to be colder, you know, that can take a lot out of a team, and it can make or break a club season. You know, it's basically kind of what a lot of the people, including myself in the Arsenal world, kind of thought broke our season last year when Ramsey went off injured with a thigh injury and then was out for, you know, 2-3 months, whatever it was.
So, yeah, no. When you mentioned the fitness regime, that's, I guess, what I meant was the fitness regime includes, you know, getting those planned rest in. So I guess it was bad wording on my part, but you got the point. So we agree.
Yeah, no, and that's a little bit of wording on me, because I'm still – in my head, when people talk about fitness, that means, you know, your cardiovascular fitness and not necessarily your physical state or your injury state or whatever.
Well, you know what? Your head is stuck in the mud just like all those English managers.
Yeah, man, damn, even Allardyce passed me up. How did that happen?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. So there's just some thoughts from us on that. It's an important topic because, as we said, you know, if you drop points this weekend, say Man U drop some points, could that bite them in the end? And it could all be down to just, you know, because they had to rest some people. I don't know. I mean, that's crazy to think that, but it's possible.
Yeah, and just to take the opposite end, it's, you know, like any other sport, coaches are constantly looking for an edge. So you can bet if something like this is perceived or even proven to provide an edge in your competition, and like you said, you're able to steal 6, 9, 10 points early in the season and get you a good start and give your club confidence going into the winter, then you can bet a lot of managers are going to start doing it. And like I said, we don't have a lot of hard evidence on this, but like, again, this is my opinion, what's going on, because that's definitely one of the things that the fitness guy that Arsenal hired this year is really heavily into. And again, I only bring it up Arsenal because I know that, but just meaning that I'm pretty sure it goes on at other clubs too. So,
and it's just not publicized, because, you know, you don't see news articles and official press releases about physios.
Well, yeah, and a lot of this just journalists simply don't know about it because they're not in it, and they're, you know, narrative and story-driven journalists these days. But, you know, you and I being in the GIS world, we know all about how mapping data can be used for all sorts of things that people don't understand. And a lot of this fitness stuff is basically just human mapping and how much they run and what, you know, what sort of stress levels they may be under depending on the conditions and all this other stuff. And like I said, it's a growing thing that a lot of clubs are starting to use. And again, you're going to see a lot more of it in the future. So when you do see when the journalists finally do discover about this stuff in 3 or 4 years, again, you'll go, oh yeah, I heard that on those two nut jobs podcasts a few years ago.
Yes. All right. Let's just take a quick look forward here to the some of the highlights, some of the fixtures that are going to be coming this week. Now, I do believe we do have Champions League playoffs starting Tuesday.
Yeah, we're in it. We're in one. Uh-huh.
And then Europa League playoffs as well. So we have European qualifiers this weekend, or this week, midweek. And this weekend, I'm just looking at the list here, not a lot to choose from. That it's going to be top-notch, but, I mean, everything, as we said, is competitive. You got Villa and Newcastle. That might be interesting. Chelsea will play Leicester City. You got another London derby with Crystal Palace and West Ham. Everton-Arsenal looks like the pick of the litter.
Yeah, we got the late game again, so I get to sleep in. Woo!
Yeah. And then other Hull and Stoke. That'll be interesting if you like bomb balls.
Yeah.
And then we got another London derby with Tottenham and QPR.
Yeah, which Harry returns to White Hart Lane should be interesting.
It should be. But hopefully not too interesting. So there you go. So those are the matches to look forward to.
I mean, you know, in the comments.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it'll be like, oh, it's terrific to be back.
Oh, well, I helped build this place, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You're definitely going to hear some sort of comment along those lines this
about,
week.
Oh, yeah, I helped build this. Yeah, he's playing with the same squad that I had. I recommended all those guys to Spurs.
Yeah, walking on the shoulders, walking on the giant shoulders of Ari Redknapp.
Yeah. So, all right, folks, so that is our opening interlude into the EPL. And a great interlude it was. We hope you enjoyed all the action. We certainly did.
Yeah, it was a pretty entertaining opening week, I thought.
And
which the best part about it was the which I'm surprised we haven't talked about it yet, but the Pigeon versus Ashley Young incident was awesome. Made my weekend.
Yeah, there you go.
If you're into, Google it if you don't know.
If you're into childish humor.
Yeah, which I am.
So, yeah, so the EPL interlude was absolutely outstanding. And we, the Two Dap Yanks, will be back next weekend to break it all down. So be sure to come back. Or yeah. You're, you know, some kind of sycophant who doesn't enjoy intelligent soccer talk.
Yeah, you come back. Y'all are always welcome, bots. We know you listen.
So, all right. For Corey Chatelain, I am Chad Smith. We will see you next time.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at twodaftyanks.com or at Two Daft Yanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.